Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Get Into It with Gila. I'm Gila Glassberg, your host of this podcast. I'm a registered dietitian, intuitive eating counselor. And today on the podcast, I have Chaya Liba Kopernik, who is a clinical psychologist who lives in Israel, which you'll hear all about that on the episode. And although we recorded this episode a few weeks ago, I was really excited to put it out. And I think that we covered a lot of ground. I was just, you know, skimming the episode and taking down some notes, and something that I really wanted to talk about that Chaya Liba does a great job explaining is that so many things affect our mood, so many things affect our eating, so many things affect our sleep, and all those things affect each other. And there is no one look of health. There is no one person who does health 100%. And also just recognizing that there's no wrong way to feel. So she talks a lot about all of us, many of us who have been chronically invalidated and the result of that and how detrimental that could be. And I think that you are really going to enjoy the episode. If you are looking to make peace with food, learn about intuitive eating, learn how to care for yourself, go to my website, www.gilaglassberg.com. You can see a bunch of videos and recordings like this, as well as many, many blog posts that I wrote about intuitive eating and health at every size, body positivity. And on my website, you can apply for a free 20-minute consultation that we could see if we're a good fit to work together. I am still currently taking insurance. The insurances that I take are Blue Cross Blue Shield, Emblem, Aetna, Cigna, and United Healthcare, but only the Empire plan. And you could apply right on my website. There's an application video that you could apply right from the website to work with me. I am taking one-on-one clients and hoping to get another group running soon. So if you're interested in working with me one-on-one, reach out. If you're interested in doing a group coaching, let me know. I also do have a self-paced course on Teachable. If you just type in my name, you will see that you could learn all about intuitive eating. And if you're more of that type of learner that you are self-motivated and you could do it by yourself, go for it. I also always recommend, like, if you are new to intuitive eating, you don't have to start working with me or an intuitive eating counselor. You could just read the book, Intuitive Eating, the fourth edition, and you could also get the workbook. Sometimes people just reach out when they're doing all that and they still feel stuck, and that's where the counseling really does help. But without further ado, here's the episode. Hi, everyone, and welcome to my podcast, Get Into It with Gila. I know you're going to love the content here because you will gain inspiration, powerful tools and insights, and valuable knowledge. If you want more of this, please visit my website at www.gilaglassberg.com or visit me on Instagram at Gila Glassberg. I'm Gila Glassberg, a registered dietitian and intuitive eating counselor. I have come to realize by counseling many, many women that this work is much deeper and greater than food and body image. It's the bigger picture challenges we face of love, belonging, acceptance, what our true values and goals are, noticing them, addressing them, and gaining skills to move forward. If you have been struggling with what your life's purpose is, or you just feel stuck in general and don't know what's holding you back, this podcast will enlighten and inspire you to take action and move forward. This podcast is about other women in the 21st century who feel that losing weight will fix all their problems or somehow meet their unmet needs. Hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Get Into It with Gila. I'm Gila Glassberg, and today I have with me Chaya Liba Kopernik. Did I say that right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thanks so much for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Glad to be here.
Okay. So tell the listeners a little bit about yourself. Where do you live and what do you do?
Sure. My name is Chaya Liba Kopernik. I'm a clinical psychologist. I actually live in Givat Zev in Israel, and I love it here. And I'm very privileged to work with amazing from women and girls who are struggling with a lot of stuff, but really, you know, hard workers, and see a lot of good work happening.
Awesome. So where are you originally from?
I'm from Queens, New York, born and bred.
And then you moved to Israel. When did you move to Israel?
2 years ago.
Oh, you just moved from Queens?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Was it always your dream to make Aliyah?
It was. I don't know if always, but for a very long time. And that was definitely the plan. So.
And what's like, I just have to ask, because I also like a friend's family have moved to Israel. What's like the biggest change for you, if you don't mind me asking?
What's the biggest change? I don't know what the biggest change is, but what big changes is like learning the school system. I think I had like thought I understood the school system, but kind of like for real confronting the nuances in the education system is sometimes like, whoa, what's up with that? Why are they doing that? So that's I think a real culture shock. And shopping, that took me a really long time. I think I finally have a handle on
Food shopping.
it. Food shopping and stuff shopping, like the
Stuff
first
shopping.
term, I was like, I don't even know where to get stuff. Like, I don't know where to go for
Totally.
how does this work?
Do you speak Hebrew? Like, how's your Hebrew?
I do speak Hebrew, but my husband is Israeli and I work with Americans, so I really feel that I've been out of the water. Like I haven't like been forced to deal with it, so my Hebrew is like worse than it's ever been, I would say.
I totally hear that. I mean, I'm terrible with languages in general. So like people are always like, didn't you like go to yeshiva your whole life? I'm like, I don't speak Hebrew. I don't know
No,
Hebrew.
yeah,
I
that's
don't
not connected. But I really did speak a fluent Hebrew a while ago, and
Yeah.
less so now, I would say.
I hear you. Well, you'll pick it up from like your kids and people around you, know? Yeah.
Totally.
Okay. So that's awesome. I'm so happy for you that you live in Israel. It's amazing. Okay, so tell me, you said you're a clinical psychologist. So, did you always know you wanted to be a clinical psychologist? How did that happen?
I knew I was interested in working with people. I thought I definitely wanted to do something related to psychology. I think what really solidified it for me was I worked like I did like a volunteer position in a hospital setting, and I was like, oh, this is what I need to be doing. That's what like really made it very clear cut for me. But I say to people a lot, like, I think everybody secretly wishes they did what I do. Don't all people just want to be like thinking about people and how we work and changing ourselves and living better lives all the time? Doesn't everyone want to do what I do? So I did feel.
I totally relate to that, by the way. I have to just say that. Like, I can totally, I do sometimes think I should have been a psychologist instead of a dietitian
I
because
think
of.
what you're doing is pretty, a lot like helping people work on themselves and
With
live a
their,
healthy
yeah.
life.
Yeah. But it is funny that you say that because sometimes when I have conversations with people, like, who let's say they do like accounting, like they have nothing to do with the inner workings of the human minds, they're like, you do that, like that's so intense. Like I would just cry all day. I'm like, yeah, it's really intense. But this is so random, but I just think of it as like the Enneagram. Like, are you, do you know your number?
Eight.
You're an eight. Okay, fine. So I'm a four. I don't really know. I just know my number. And I just know that fours, like they tend to like feel things and they just like read the room, feel the energy, like carry everybody's load. So like when I read that book, I was like, oh, that makes so much sense, you know? Like some people just like probably eights also, but like some people just like it's
Think if
just
I remember, it's a little
natural.
more hard. I think eights are like very like change makers, passionate, like, yeah,
So
mover
we have,
shakers. I think it is, yeah.
I'll look it up after. I'll try to put it in the show notes. I always like quote that book, but I really only really know about my number, which is kind of like funny, but okay, so what is your area of specialty? Do you have an area of specialty?
Yeah, I do a lot of a treatment called DBT. So I think of it as like one kind of core issue that I see play out in a lot of different ways. And the core issue being experiencing your emotions in a big way. People who kind of experience their emotions in a big way often end up growing up kind of chronically invalidated. What that means is that could be, horrible trauma and terrible things, but it also can be just when you're an emotionally intense person. The world may just not understand you or not get your experience and just communicate to you consistently that you don't make sense. And when you're consistently getting that message, all kinds of problems can come out. So I use this model DBT. I mean, I do a lot of other treatments also, but that's the predominantly what I do is this DBT treatment. I do it with kids, teens, and adults. Since moving over to work, pretty much pretty exclusively with the Orthodox community, with the Reform community. A lot of what I used to see in DBT clients, I don't see that as much. And I see a lot more stuff around eating and eating, body image, and how we treat our bodies and how we, and I see that like so much more. I think it's a much safer thing. When you're experiencing your emotions in a big way, you are very likely going to end up doing things that hurt you in the long term, but that make you feel better in the short term. And in the secular world, that can look like so many things, but in the firm world, that tends to be a little harder. Like it still happens, just less. Mm-hmm. And so I see that eating is like a safer route for that same kind of issue. So I see that play out a lot. And usually the people who come to me with either specifically with disordered eating, or we then discover that like, oh, that's a thing for you. It's not like the primary or only problem. There's like a whole bunch of things going on connected to this core. My emotions are experienced in a big way. And so, yeah, I'm going to do a lot of things to try and help myself, of course. Mm-hmm. And I think society only kind of plays that along, unfortunately. Yeah.
So first of all, could you just explain to the listeners, what is DBT? What does it stand for? What does it mean? What is it?
Sure. Yeah. So DBT stands for dialectical behavior therapy. It's a kind of, I would say it's like under the umbrella of cognitive behavioral therapy or CBT. So if you've heard of CBT, it's one of many types of CBT treatments, meaning that we focus on how you think and how you behave to impact how you feel. So that's like kind of but DBT has this nuance of dialectics, meaning that there's always multiple truths. There's always multiple ways of looking at things. So I love my mom and I hate my mom. Therapy helps me, and it's really hard and difficult. All kinds of dialectics existing in the world all the time. Mm-hmm. So that's like the foundation. So our core dialectic in DBT is acceptance and change. At any given point, I accept myself completely exactly as I am, and I'm working towards change. And that's our core dialectic in DBT, and everything kind of revolves around that. And there's four different modes of treatment in DBT. One is individual DBT, which is a very particular way of doing individual therapy, and often can include family or parenting if appropriate or needed. Phone coaching, DBT skills group, which is often what DBT is known for, but DBT mm-hmm. skills group is one piece. And DBT team for the therapist. So the DBT therapist has to be on a team of other DBT therapists. So that's awesome. DBT in a nutshell.
Yeah, I feel like, first of all, I definitely am somebody who experiences my feelings like very strongly. And I'm sure you've heard of the book, The Highly Sensitive Person. Have you heard mm-hmm. of that book? Do you like that book?
Yeah.
Okay, I really like that book. And I felt like I got a lot of validation from that book, because I was like, oh, like, you know, a lot of people who I've spoken to were like, yeah, like my whole life, everybody's like, you're so sensitive. And then there's like kind of like finally an explanation, you know? Mm-hmm. So I totally hear what you're saying. I've said this to clients so many times, like, because I also mostly work with the Orthodox community. I would say like 80% of my caseload is, but I have some clients who aren't Jewish, who I'm from. But yeah, that, I guess like you usually do attract people who are similar to you, but I'm like happy to work with people who aren't similar to me in that way, you know? But I've said this to clients so many times that, and I've actually written about this a lot also, that like most people won't go, or at least my clients are not going to drugs, they're not going to alcohol, they're not going to other types of things. So like, and food has become such a like foodie culture. So it's like, and so it's kind of like those two things are true, that there's like a foodie culture and there's also this diet culture, this like, I feel like that's not even the right word to explain a diet culture anymore. It's like this insane obsession with wellness, health, losing weight, like all the magazines are talking about it, right? Even if they are talking about intuitive eating, they're not informed about intuitive eating. They're just sort of like, oh, intuitive eating is now a thing.
It's an option for, right. I actually had somebody come up to me. I gave a lecture maybe a month ago. And somebody came up to me after, and I just mentioned intuitive eating in passing. It wasn't the main point of the lecture. And somebody came up to me after, and they said, by the way, intuitive eating doesn't work. And then like walked away. And I have no idea what they meant by that, but my guess, if I had to guess, I would guess that they were saying it doesn't make you lose weight.
Right.
Because that's the goal, right?
Right.
The goal is weight loss. And because obviously, because weight being overweight is bad.
Right.
And you will die.
Right.
From
right. Right. And just in case anybody doesn't know, you're joking and you're
I'm totally joking.
Yeah.
Yes.
No. It's just so funny because it's like you and I know that, but it's like so many times clients call me and they're like, okay, so how many clients have you worked with intuitive eating and does it work? I'm like, well, what is your definition of working? Well,
work,
you know. Yes. How many people have lost weight? Right. So I don't focus on weight loss. And they're like, unless people come to me and they already know about intuitive eating, but a lot of times they don't. And I'm like, but you know what? I have to just say this. And I was trained by Evelyn Tribbley, and she's said this to me so many times. A lot of times you really are planting seeds. So you might say to a client, a potential client, a friend or a family member, like, this is what intuitive eating is. And, and they look at you like you have two heads, like literally, like, why would I ever do that? Like, if it's not about weight loss. Doesn't make any sense, and weight loss is the most important thing. It's like so countercultural, right? And then they come back
really if you go back to like where when people are born, it really makes absolutely no sense. We're totally born as intuitive eaters. Mm-hmm. Like nobody needs to tell a fetus how much food to eat. Like that is absurd. Mm-hmm. And if you actually nurse your baby, it is the most intuitive eating experience possible. You don't need to know, like, you know, it's really hard as a mother to know, did my child eat enough? You don't know, and you don't need to know, because you will know because your child will be happy and okay, and everything will be just fine. Mm-hmm. And that's it. That's all you need to know. And the baby knows when to start and when to stop, and when they feel good and when they don't feel good. And that's it. They don't need any more information. And then we like totally override this system with, you know, matched foods that we decide in stages of how much to give and shove it in their mouth, and airplane to distract them to make it go in. It's like completely like a diet culture overload from like the moment you're, and if you are using bottles, usually was it, oh, there's just a drop more, like just take a little more. Oh, that's right. It's exactly what we're doing from such a young age. It makes no like intuitive sense. It doesn't follow how we're created.
Right. So when you started practicing as a clinical psychologist, did you know about intuitive eating?
I don't think so. I don't think so. Honestly, very much in line with, there's a big concept in DBT called Why Mind. When we teach mindfulness, which is like our core set of skills in DBT, we teach a concept called Wise Mind. And most everybody has a Wise Mind. So in DBT, there's this skill that we teach that's pretty fundamental. There's like, I would say mindfulness are our core skills in DBT. Nothing else happens without mindfulness. We've got to have awareness before anything else happens. And one of our mindfulness skills is called wise mind. Wise mind is just the idea of everybody has this inner intuitive knowing. Nobody needs to teach it to you. Everyone has it. People who grew up chronically invalidated really had that beaten out of them. And in terms of eating and our relationship with our bodies, I would say across the board, people who grew up in Western culture, at least, I don't know about other cultures, but in the standard Western culture, for sure have this beaten out of them. Meaning if you're constantly given the message that you don't know, you're not hungry, lunch is at 12. Mm-hmm. or have another bite because there's more on your plate. Mm-hmm. I mean, look, all the research shows like that if you know, there's these great studies where like they would just continue like refilling the soup bowl from underneath the bowl and people just keep eating it. Yeah. Because we're taught that the external information is what, so in DBT, what we talk about unrelated to eating is or food or body at all, is that there's an inner knowing and you know what your needs are. And unfortunately, when you grow up chronically invalidated, you are consistently taught the message that you don't know. I have so many clients say to me like, but I'm supposed to be sad or I shouldn't be upset about that. Mm-hmm. So not relevant. Emotions are whatever they are. There is no wrong way to feel. There's ineffective ways of acting. There's unhelpful ways of thinking, but there's no wrong way to feel. You feel how you feel. That is what it is. There's nothing mm-hmm. wrong with the feeling itself. And we're so like beating that out, same exact thing with food. So when I kind of connected that in my brain, it became so logical. And I actually only recently discovered that not all psychologists are aware of this. I totally thought that everybody was on board for this. And somebody mentioned to me recently, you know, like it's just the two of us who are aware of this whole intuitive eating, health at every size model. I was so blown away because it seems to be so aligned. So I guess when I learned the intuitive eating, health at every size model, it just made so much sense with everything else I was already doing.
And how did you hear about it and learn about it?
I don't know where I first heard about it. I don't know. I think I don't know if I had like one particular moment. I definitely like over time, once I had heard it enough, decided, okay, I'm going to get these books and read up on this more. But I think I had heard about it in a lot of subtle ways from different people who I'm exposed to. So I don't know if it was one particular moment that I can point to.
So that's okay. So when you started working as a psychologist and doing CBT, DBT, you didn't know about intuitive eating, but when you learned about it, it was like, oh, this like totally aligns with everything that I'm doing already. And like you just said, the people were invalidated with their feelings. And it's very similar with people being invalidated with their hunger fullness or their satisfaction, or like, you can't be hungry, you can't be full. Like,
But I find that that's not particular to some people. Like some people grow up chronically invalidated about their feelings and don't know how to make sense of or understand or problem solve or communicate related to their feelings. But I find that like everybody's been invalidated in terms of their hunger fullness cues and in terms of their relationship with their body and their relationship with different sensations in their body, their relationship with their cycle, like all these things are so pervasively invalidated that we're just dealing in a culture of a disordered relationship with our bodies. That's like so promoted.
Right. And I know you have to like protect your clients' like privacy, but if there's anything is there anything that you could share as like a pattern, like you've seen with like so many clients that like and you said before, like they don't always know that they have an issue with food, but it just like comes up somewhere in the session. Like, is there like a pattern that you're like, you see with your clients or in the firm world, or maybe not even just that?
Yeah. I mean, I think even like a simple, straightforward, cause I can think of more complex cases, but I would say even like a very simple, straightforward example is I hear all the time the idea of like, I should exercise. And that one upsets me. Or like, I should not eat that. Like I should mm-hmm. eat better. And that gets me already right. Like, why should you? We're doing this in every other area of your life. Why should you? You can make intentional choice around what you want in your life and then invite that in. Like, I want to eat in a way that feels good to my body. So I'm going to eat these foods as often as I choose to. And sometimes I won't. And that's also going to be okay. That's what we're doing in every other area of your life. Why would we not do that in terms of how you treat yourself? There's actually a skill that we teach in DBT called the please skill. And I've totally like remade it because it was making me annoyed. So the please skill is taking care of your body in order to take care of your mind, and stands for like basically pay attention to physical illness, exercise, avoid mood altering substances, sleep, and balanced eating. And just those terms were annoying me. So I redid it into, first of all, it should include hormones because the hormones impact how you feel. And that's a bodily function that impacts how you feel. And you should definitely pay attention to that one also. Yeah. And second of all, I would rather talk about intuitive movement and intuitive eating over balanced eating and exercise. And in terms of sleep also, like it talks about, you know, make sure to get 7 to 9 hours of sleep a night. But I know from research that people have different sleep needs at different parts of their lives. 8 hours of sleep a night is a made up arbitrary thing, just like 10,000 steps a day or 2,000 calories a day. Those are arbitrary things that are not related to how we exist at different parts of our lives, how different people are.
You can't break a person down into like that number. Like even if people
right. are generally- Right, we want to so right. badly.
Right.
No, totally.
Okay, sorry, I interrupted you. So finish that thought. So you
no, so I redid that acronym to be MISHAPS. I remember mindful movement, intuitive eating, sleep, but I talk about sleep in more depth, hormones. I added being alone just because it worked with the acronym, but that also impacts how we feel. And
love that.
Yeah.
I love that actually. So it's interesting. Do your clients, when your clients come to you, they don't all know that you're going to be practicing from an intuitive eating lens, or they do, like, they, that's why they
totally are. Totally not. I'm actually really not. I actually was looking at the certification for it recently, 'cause I was like, I should do that. But, in my other time. So no, I'm totally not like known that I practice from that model at all. I do get referred people. I get my regular clients who often have eating stuff, and I'll talk about that. And I'll say, like, listen, take it as it is. Like, you don't have to work with me on this at all. Like, it's, that's your choice. If you want to work with me, we can. And if you don't, like, you don't have to, like, it's not necessary. But I will mention, like, I do think I want my clients to know that birth control is not as simple as it looks. I want my clients to know that going on a diet is not as simple as it sounds. So I will just, like, say, I'm just going to share with you this information, take it or leave it. And then some clients want to work on that more. And some clients are like, I've got my thing, I'm okay. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And that's okay, I respect that. But then some people get referred to me specifically because they had an eating disorder. They did standard eating disorder treatment. I always want people to do standard eating disorder treatment first, because sometimes that's enough. So do that first, but sometimes that's not enough. And when it's not enough, it's usually because we really need a major, it's not just, we need the, some people need like the refeeding and like the basic, just, repair the relationship with food. But sometimes we need like a deeper step than that. And that's coming with like, I need the full blown, learning how to navigate a life with big emotions. I need to really tap into and learn about my wise mind and be able to eat intuitively and respect my own, you know, intuition around that. And then we'll do that major overhaul. But yeah.
So let's say the clients who come to you and they aren't specifically coming to you for their relationship with food, and then you tell them about intuitive eating, or you educate them, are they like shocked, blown away, like they can't
So sometimes I'll say like, just read this book, or like, just check out this I'm like so aware of Instagram, but I'll say like, just check out this Instagram, if I know that they're more likely to check out Instagram than read a book, I'll say that, because I want them to just get a little bit of exposure, because it's a completely different mindset. And like you were saying earlier, just like seeds sometimes is sometimes so powerful, just because it's think about like somebody who's grown up like in a cult for 30 years. That's what we're talking about. We're talking right. about an entire culture that's grown up in a model where if you're fat, you're bad. And if you diet, you're good. And if you're seen eating in public the wrong foods, then you're bad. Yeah. And that's really, and the only way to live with yourself is if you're following these things, but even when you follow these things, it doesn't work. So right. it's a really strange world, but this is how everyone is. Yeah. It was a while ago. I gave a lecture to seminary teachers, and they were asking about what about like when somebody has an eating disorder. And I just want to make clear, we all have an eating disorder. I just want to be clear about that. Like we're all so in this culture where this is promoted.
Mm-hmm. Were those seminary teachers surprised, shocked by that?
No, they were like, yes, you are right.
Yeah. Oh, seminary. My year in seminary, I was so into dieting and exercise, and you wouldn't, like, I wouldn't even have called it that then. Like, I was just like the healthy one. Ask Ela, she's the healthy one, you know? It's a little bit funny to think back to it, but it's also like, it's not really funny, because it's like, that was just, it was so praised. It was so looked up to, and it was such a status thing. It was such a part of your identity. I like the way that you describe that also, because I say that to clients sometimes when we work together for like one or two or even like 10 sessions, and they're like, when am I going to get better? I'm like, well, you've been dieting for 30 years and I've seen you for 2 months. So, and they're like, right. I'm like, yeah, you've literally believed this for 20 or 30 years. Like since you were 10 years old, you've been told like you're bad if you're fat, you're bad if you eat cake, your siblings are better because they chose an apple, they chose, you know, like, so it's just like really important for people to hear that over and over and over again, because it's like we are kind of like swimming upstream with our message, because so many people, like I would still say like, you know, 80% of people are still dieting into the dieting wellness culture. So we do, like, this is just really important work, you know?
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah. So I'm really happy to hear that you're doing this work and that you're really like fully embracing the intuitive eating, how that exercise. I did want to ask you this. I wasn't going to ask you, but since you said it, what do you teach your clients about like birth control and hormones and stuff like that? Because I feel like I've actually never spoken to anyone about that on the podcast. And I've spoken to people about this privately all the time. And it's something that comes up all the time. I don't know if you hear this all the time, but it's like, people don't know that some people are so sensitive to hormones.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Can you speak about that a little?
Yeah. So I personally, I did not have any, as me, highly as a person, had, I would say, no information about birth control going into marriage. I think my conversation with my college teacher went like this. I think she said, do you want to start your marriage on birth control? And I said, what? People do that? And she said, yeah. And I said, well, I don't want to do that. And she said, okay. And that was the end of the whole conversation. That was it.
Wow. So, I really appreciate you sharing that story. I'm not going to share my story, but I have, you know, my own trauma around this. And I've heard this from so many people in my life. So I really appreciate you sharing that.
Yeah. And I, by the way, like if my college teacher is listening, like, she's awesome. She's great. I think that's normal.
Right.
And I think that's so not okay that that's normal. So I had no information. And then I went into marriage, got pregnant, fine, whatever. I had a C-section. And so I was told I need to take birth control. You had a C-section. So this is what you take. You're nursing. This is what you take. Okay. You're spotting. You have to deal with that. Okay, this is what you do. But that was it. That was the mm-hmm. end of the conversation. Now, I gained a ton of weight on birth control. I had crazy side effects from it. And so I was on top of that. I tried multiple birth controls over the years and had different issues with different ones. And so I just think it's not okay for any married girl to not have this information. It's like unacceptable mm-hmm. because doctors are not going to provide that information. They have 15 minutes with you max. They're not going to give you this. They're not able to give you this. So somebody has to say it. It's not okay to not say it. Like side note on other things people don't say, my first pregnancy was a miscarriage and nobody said that that's like a normal thing. That's a normal thing for anybody listening. That's a normal thing. Wow. So, and it didn't mean anything about my fertility or my ability to have children. It meant nothing. It didn't have to mean anything. And it's okay. It's painful. It's upsetting. It is, I want to give all that, but I also just wish somebody had just told me this is normal, because my reaction was, so horrified that it didn't need to be. It was like unnecessary amounts of pain that I experienced because of it. So I just, if people would just say that, like, people have miscarriages, it's a normal part of your conception life cycle.
Is this statistic 1 in 4 pregnancies and miscarriage? Right.
So 25%. Yes, 1 in 4 pregnancies and a miscarriage. And there are for sure problems that people have that cause them to have multiple miscarriages. But also, if you are a regular childbearing person, you will probably have miscarriages mm-hmm. and that's okay. It's still painful and upsetting and all that. And you deserve all the self-care and community support that you can get.
Knowledge.
Yes. People deserve to have the knowledge that this is a normal thing. Mm-hmm. So back to birth control, people need to have the knowledge that birth control has side effects. There is no birth control that does not have a side effect at all.
Right.
Other than abstinence. There is no birth control that doesn't have side effects. And you need, there is none. If you think that you are on one that doesn't have one, that is something that is a lie that's been told you. That's not true. So to understand what those side effects are, I think just I like to tell my clients, I just want you to be aware. If you want to discuss this, just like I said before, if you want to discuss this more, I'm happy to discuss it more. If you don't, you don't have to at all. But I do want you to have the information that birth control impacts your mental health, period, it impacts your mental health, and it impacts your physical health, period, it impacts your physical health, like end of the sentence. And you need to have that information. How it's going to impact you, I don't know. And you can choose to explore that more or less if you want. I just need you to have that information.
I think that's like so beyond important. And again, like I said, I wasn't even planning on speaking about this, but I think like just from the so many conversations that I've had with like friends, really, it's like, I don't know, we were saying before about like, even like coming on picture versus video versus like what our revs say. And like, I do share a lot of my podcast, but I also don't share a lot of my podcast. And like, I'm always like so torn, like, I know I'll help people, but like, I obviously like share things that I'm comfortable to share, but also like the rest of the people in my family have to be comfortable with, you know. But like, I just feel like this specific thing comes up so often. And like you said, like it affects your mental health, it affects your physical health, you gained weight from it. Like, this is like conversation that I have with like everyone, you know, like people just don't know that. And it's like the same thing with miscarriage. It's like you said, it's like so normal. It happens to so many people, but like, just to know that it's normal, just to know that it's part of life cycle, right? Just to know that, like, if you will go on birth control, it will probably affect XYZ. And like, most people go on birth control at some point in their life, right? So that's like so important. And I'm sure like you lift a huge burden off your clients when they hear that. No,
I hope so. No, there's I definitely have clients who say like, okay, like I'm okay with that. Like, I'm okay with that, and I'm okay with the information that I have thus far, and I'll deal with myself. And then there are clients who really do want to know more and need to know more, or have already been impacted so much, and already get that. And they're happy to like have the space to talk that out a little more.
Yeah.
And make more informed choices about it.
Yeah. So what's like you said, you gave a lecture, and I guess you give lectures, like what's like your goal in the firm world or the non-firm world, but what's your goal as a psychologist who's also really, you are really practicing from? I hope you will take the training, and Evelyn's awesome, and Elise is also awesome. I just happened to do the training with Evelyn, but it really did change my life, and I felt a lot more confident to practice through that lens once I took the training. So like, where do you see your practice going?
Yeah, so really my dream has been for many years, three different things. First of all, increasing access to evidence-based care in mental health in the firm community. That's number one. Number two is increasing access to evidence-based training for mental health professionals in the firm community. And number three is increasing access to information in the firm community about evidence-based mental health. So meaning community members, people in the community should understand what good treatment looks like and demand it. And mental health professionals should be at a, like, kind of held to a standard where, and not just held to it, have access to get that training more easily, or have more information about what is evidence-based or what is most up-to-date, and have ways of accessing that. And from people looking for mental health services should be able to access evidence-based care. That's not to say that there's not room for other, like in every health, in every area of health, there's got to be, you know, different types of ways of getting care, because different people are different. And knowing what generally works is valuable, and being able to access it. So I think that for me, that ends up showing up in so many different ways. So where, and in every area, I'm constantly looking for what's the top in this area. That's what I was saying before. I didn't understand how are not all psychologists on board with this. Mm-hmm. And that's because this is what's current. This is what we know is, like, if you think about health at every size, like, we know diets don't work. Mm-hmm. If you speak to an obesity researcher, they will tell you what they know. This is not mysterious hidden information from the world. But this is mysterious hidden information from the general person. And that's to me not okay. So that's to me like that match. And this shows up for me in many areas where I'm like, mm-hmm. pursuing that information. And whenever it's applying to my clients, I'm like, okay, what's going on for people there? Got to get access to that. And I think because eating and body image and how we treat our bodies just is so consumingly connected to our mental health, that shows up for me a lot. So I don't know if I have a goal in particular with intuitive eating, per se. I just want people to have access to good care. I don't mm-hmm. think that as a culture, we should be continuing to perpetuate this diet mindset. I think that like the saddest thing is continuing to teach our teens that this is a way to treat yourself or that this is a way to aspire to.
Right.
I was just reading this book. I'm not going to say the name because I got far enough into it that I don't think I'm gonna recommend it anymore. But it was just saying like that in terms of growing up in a world in which bodies have to be an apology or something that we're ashamed of or that we're gonna constantly hate is a really terrible aspiration to be on this track of forever hating ourselves. Really doesn't make any sense. And this is the message that's perpetuated and
right.
It really makes sense.
Yeah, I think, I don't know if you read the book Anti-Diet, but I really like that book. And I think that you have it? I think that I actually listened to the audiobook. I like the audiobooks, but I think that book did a really good job of explaining like how much like the world benefits from us hating ourselves. Actually, yes. I read it in a long time, but like I see this with clients all the time. And like, sometimes I feel like it sounds hippy dippy because like so many people are just like, come on, dieting is like just what people do. I'm just like, literally think about it. Like dieting is telling you to hate yourself, even if it's not dieting, it's just any way to manipulate your body. And you, no matter how you change your body, you'll never be happy. So you're literally like investing all the time, all the money, all the energy. And then 3 months later, like you hate some other area of your body and then you'll pay some other practitioner to help you fix that area of your body. But like, don't you see that you're never going to be happy? Like, it doesn't matter how skinny you are. It doesn't matter how perfect your eyes are. Like you just hate your hair, you know, like that's just the whole point of diet culture and the beauty industry is like, and yes, it is attacking men more than it used to, but I just feel like us women, like it just keeps us, like I've said this on my Instagram, like dieting keeps you small, but it keeps you literally like, it's trying to keep you like actually small, but it's also like keeping your voice small and keeping like, because you're so all consumed with staying the size.
External, this is the way it should be.
Right.
Like why is it that young is the right way to look? Like, why is that a good thing? When did that become a good thing? Like what, like that's a made up construed cultural thing. That's not true. Right. It's not true in the world that young is correct.
Right.
Like older comes with so many wonderful things. Why would you want to change that? Why would it be wrong to look
your like age?
Your age, why would that be wrong? You're supposed to, that's supposed to happen. That's
right.
That's normal. That's healthy. Right. That's not bad. If something's wrong, that's something to pay attention to.
Right.
But not because there's some arbitrary standard. That's again, like I said before, like this external cue of what's the right way to be.
Right. Well, maybe just because we live in like such a physical world, like I'm thinking of Instagram and filters and all those things. And even if you're not on Instagram, you are looking around in the world, right? You see like the city bus and you see the magazines around and it's like, like no one's going to put out a magazine that doesn't have a perfectly filtered picture, right? Because that's totally just part of 2022. So it's like,
I actually recently was at the mall. I went on a trip to America for a couple weeks and I was at the mall and I saw a picture of somebody like a model on a clearly I don't go shopping that much. A picture of a person on a model on a paper, right? Yeah, fine, good words. It showed like some what's it called? Like the lines. When somebody has like lines on their skin.
Cellulite,
thank you. So it showed like some cellulite on her skin, and I was so happy.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, that's like a person.
I'm so grateful. Yeah.
That's a picture of a person on this poster in the mall, because that's so valuable
I saw this video going around, which I'll try to find and put in the show notes, but it's and like when they came up with like ways to get rid of cellulite, right? So they portrayed it like only some people have cellulite and cellulite's really bad, and they made everybody hate cellulite so then they could like charge people to get rid of their cellulite. But like literally everyone has cellulite, like, you know, skin, people who have skin have cellulite. And I saw that video. I was like, that's so powerful. Like, yeah, like we all have whatever you want to call it, blemishes, or we're human, or we just like get older, or our bodies change, or have stretch marks, yeah. or like, you know, like have aging lines. I don't know if people what it's called. Like, I don't know. So many people are so into like Botox and all that stuff. It's like, you know that bodies change, right? Like we're still teaching that to people.
Yeah. And body change. And it's also, I would also just encourage, like, it's a good thing that your body changes. Right. It's not normal for your body to not respond to experience that's healthy, that's adaptive. Like right. I had a client who really struggled with feeling bloated. Like, I can't handle feeling bloated. Your body is supposed to feel different ways, different times. You want to tune in and listen to that. That's information for you. Right. It's wonderful information. Sometimes it means that food doesn't feel good for me, or that food at that time doesn't feel good for me. Sometimes it means I need to rest more. Mm-hmm. So, you know, learning to listen rather than it's wrong, I need to make it stop, is like a whole different planet. Like your body will tell you the information that you need.
Yeah, I love that actually, because I know, like, for myself, like when I don't sleep enough, my stomach really hurts, and it has nothing to do with the way that I ate. And I'm just saying that because you just said that about bloated and eating and timing and stuff. And it's like you said before, it's like the so much of intuitive eating is just that ability to like slow down, hear what your body's giving you, that information, that message, and then like act accordingly. Not like, no, you can't be hungry, or no, you can't be sad, or why would you be sad about that, right? Like, what's the point? And instead of just like being curious and compassionate, like welcoming. And of course, there are ways to that aren't helpful to act, and there are ways that are unhelpful to think. But like you said before, like, this is how you feel, and like, it is really valuable information. It really is.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I would say actually, like, so valuable. Like my most recent after birth, I went to like a, what's called like a Beit HaChlama, or like a post birth home, whatever. And a lot of women were, they had like a huge salad bar every day. And I was like, why are all these women eating this? And also, I gave birth like right before Yom Kippur, and Matzah Yom Kippur, they had milk and cake. And I don't really eat gluten or dairy. They had milk and cake and coffee. And I was like, so confused. Like, this is the food that you give to like pregnant, to postpartum women who some of them fasted, some of them partially fasted. This is what you give them. And all the salads, and all of them are like, oh, I love salad. I love salad. And I'm like, there is no way your body postpartum wants salad. That is hard work on your system that is trying its hardest to recover. And you are making it have salad. That is not what your body wants. It is not what your body wants. Now, everybody's listening to themselves. I'm not,
right, you know, right.
But right. I was just the fact that like everybody was like, yay, salad. We all yeah. want salad. Raw yeah. vegetables are hard work for a stomach that's just been squished and readjusted. And no.
Right. I hear that. I mean, I was very excited that they had salad in the hospital after I gave birth. I did just have a C-section like 3.5 months ago, but I was so excited when they had like what's it called, eggplant parmesan. And when I was able to eat like a tuna wrap, I was like starving. Like if they only sent me a salad, I was like crying. Like, I need more food. And it's like,
yeah,
it's so crazy, because like, I know so many clients would like, the way that I was eating like to help me recover, and I was always hungry and I was nursing, I was like, so many clients I know would like be struggling with this. And like, it's just like, I feel, I mean, I'm not going to, like, I always say this on my Instagram also, like, sometimes like I would have that, like, am I eating too much? You know, like that, cause I'm also in diet culture, even though like, this is what I do. And like, thank God I have the tools, but like, for so many people who don't have the tools, they just like, don't allow themselves to eat when they're hungry, yeah. like postpartum, literally recovering from surgery. And it's like, so sad. Like, I was just thinking that yeah. so this would be so sad if I was still in diet culture. Cause like, I'm literally starving. Like, I need to eat like, yeah. every 1 hour, you know? Okay. So I'm going to let you go, because I know that you have to go, but could you just tell the listeners where they could find you?
Sure. So my website is the CBT dbtcenter.com. We're on Instagram, but you know, as much as I'm capable, at the CBTdbtcenter.com. That's it. Our website has a lot of information on it. So check us out there.
Okay. So I will put that information in the show notes and people can reach out.
Awesome. Thank you.
Okay, thanks so much for coming on. It was so nice to speak with you today.
Yes, same here.
Okay, bye. Thank you all so much for being here on my podcast, Get Into It with Gila.
If you'd like to learn more about what I do and what intuitive eating is, please visit my website at www.gilaglassberg.com or follow me on Instagram at Gila Glassberg. Thank you so much. Have a great day.